Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. I've got a really great show for you today. Yeah, I know I say that every week, but I want you to know, sincerely, that I put a lot of effort into trying to find the right guests and really put together something that's worth you taking the time to listen to it. So, if I tell you we got a really great show, and I've made every effort to make sure that that's what it is. Before we get to today's show, I'd like to give you a bit of a heads up of some of the things we've got lined up for the near future. We've got some very cool and diverse guests coming up. We will be featuring an interview with Tracy Rifkind, who is known as the Queen of Kettlebells. This lady did an amazing body transformation, lost a tremendous amount of body fat, totally transformed the way she looks and feels using only one exercise, the kettlebell swing, and modifying her eating habits. We'll also be featuring an interview with Marty Klein, the creator of the Blind Yoga audio program. Marty's a great guy, has written a couple books, and we'll be talking to him in the very near future, as well as Josh Loya. Now, there's a name I know some of you know. Josh has got a tremendous following. He's a martial arts expert, as well as being a hypnotist and a coach. So we've got some great guests lined up for the near future. We're also going to be talking with a mental health professional regarding body image, why people set themselves up to fail, why people don't always see when they need to make changes in themselves, and some of the other mental aspects of being healthy and fit. I also have one very special interview, and this is a purely self-indulgent interview. It's with one of my personal bodybuilding heroes who I admired and idolized, quite frankly, growing up. And I recorded that interview a few weeks back and was going to post it and decided to hold it back as my little self-indulgence on my birthday in May. This gentleman has not granted an interview with anyone in over 10 years, and he had a tremendous bodybuilding career that lasted over 3 decades, and I'm not going to tell you who he is. Those of you that follow the sport will know a 5-time Mr. Universe winner, Mr. America winner, and in the eyes of many people, the greatest bodybuilder of all time. No, it's not Arnold, but the only reason he never beat Arnold is he never competed with Arnold. Now on to today's show. Today's show came about from 2 points. One, input from you guys, which is my best source of ideas, quite frankly. And two, because of how I responded and how I felt on a recent vacation my wife and I took. We took a little 4-night cruise, just a little mini getaway, and cruises are our personal favorite type of vacation. They're simple, they're quick, they're clean, they're uncomplicated, and they're very reasonably priced. Now, when I'm on vacation, I'm on vacation. I don't go anywhere near the gym. I don't watch my diet. I make no conscious effort to do anything healthy. But even when I'm not watching what I eat, I don't eat particularly bad. I just want to explain that. I love salt. I love chocolate. Beyond that, my eating habits aren't terrible. But I did find that because I was eating a little bit differently, I just didn't feel right. We don't drink excessively. I think in a 4-day cruise, I had 1 glass of wine. So that certainly isn't going to affect anything. But I did indulge in my escargot, in a lobster and a cream sauce, in some other wonderful foods, and a few desserts. Not real heavy into the desserts. But I noticed I just didn't physically feel good. And the only thing I could attribute it to was that I was eating differently. Richer foods, butter, cream sauces, spices I'm not used to. I went, this sounds like a good show. Food sensitivities, food allergies. We all suffer from them. Sometimes they're dramatic, like the person that eats strawberries or peanuts and their throat swells up and they can't breathe and they break out in horrible rashes. Or sometimes they're very subtle. Things like, I've noticed when I eat ice cream or drink milk, I get kind of sniffly. My body produces mucus and phlegm, and I get kind of sniffly, and I just feel a little bit off. It's a subtle, subtle allergy. There are a lot of very common allergies. I'm sure most of you don't know that most adults cannot properly digest dairy products, especially African Americans, Latins, and Asians. These races all seem to have difficulties utilizing and digesting dairy. Again, the allergies can be very subtle or they can be very dramatic, but we all seem to have them. And as we age, our bodies change. I used to drink a lot of milk. Maybe because I drank a lot of milk, I created a sensitivity to dairy. I don't know. But today, I decided we were going to address this issue. I got emails asking about elimination diets, emails asking about food sensitivities in different ways, and I decided this is a great show topic. While I was trying to put the show together, the little light just went on over my head, and I realized I've got all the information already put together. I conducted an interview with my good friend Brooks Kubik a few months ago. The focus of the interview was to promote his new nutrition book. It was a lengthy interview of about an hour and a half. But we covered food sensitivities, food allergies, organic eating, a variety of things that all were germane to what I wanted to do with this show. So I took that interview and I clipped it here and clipped it there and brought it down to a much shorter version, focusing solely on the information I wanted to address today. And we're going to get to that interview with Brooks Kubik right after we take a short break and hear from our sponsor. So this is Bill with Real World Fitness, and I'll be right back with that interview on food allergies and sensitivities with my good friend Brooks Kubik.
Hey guys, this is AZ inviting you to check out the latest addition to the Serotalk Podcast Network, The Rundown. Coming to you straight from the sports desk, we're going to cover all the headlines in the sports world. From the MVP chase in the NBA, all the free agent changes in the NFL, and all the drama in the WWE, we got you covered. Join us each and every week for The Rundown here on the Serotalk Podcast Network.
In all the research you did you find that everything old is new again? You were talking on another interview about a book from the 50s, Eat Fat to Get Lean, which sounded like an early version of the Atkins diet, which sounded like the classic bodybuilder contest prep diet that I've known for years.
Yeah, the book Eat Fat and Grow Slim was written by a British doctor named Dr. Richard Carnes and released in 1958. It's Atkins before Atkins. And I believe that Vince Gironda read that book because he certainly talked about a lot of the principles in it. But that's an example of everything that, you know, that is new, you know, goes back to the past. And you can trace low-carb diets really back to at least 1830 or 40 with the Banting diet in England that William Banting followed. You can trace it forward, and you can do that with a lot of different things. You can trace the theory that cancer is a disease of civilization. It is a disease that increases as we become more civilized. And if you look at a primitive culture following a traditional diet, be it a largely carnivorous diet with a lot of meat and a lot of fish, such as the Eskimo or the Inuit, or be it a largely vegetarian diet, such as, for example, the Hunza in the Himalayan mountains, in the Hunza Valley. If you take those populations, as long as they are following a traditional diet, they are virtually cancer-free. If you introduce into those populations a modern diet with refined foods, particularly white flour, sugar, salted meats, if you introduce that kind of diet within about one generation, 20 years, you start to see disease that you had never seen before, including cancer. And so the theory was that cancer is a disease of civilization, or more properly, a disease of civilized foods.
Progress again.
Again, progress. Now, the interesting thing about that is that theory can be traced to a French physician who served with Napoleon Bonaparte on the Waterloo campaign. I mean, it goes back a long, long way. And it was first presented at the French Academy of Science in 1842. It led to a tremendous amount of work as missionaries and physicians traveled throughout the world and made contact with primitive races. They were able to see, is there cancer here? Is this theory correct? And as they did that, they found, yeah, there's no cancer. Many other diseases are not present among the civilized societies. Then they watch as they start eating European foods, civilized foods. They see the change. And by 1915, this theory was so well accepted, all of the evidence supported it from unimpeachable sources. I mean, Albert Schweitzer reported this when he was in Africa. You know, this is not just something that a couple of cranks came up with. It was extremely well-educated people all over the globe seeing the same thing. So in 1915, the Prudential Insurance Company issues an 850-page book on cancer mortality throughout the world. And in that book, they note this theory that cancer does not occur among primitive people following traditional diets. And they note it as perfectly well understood and accepted and known to be true by everyone. That tells you something, because life insurance companies tend to be fairly conservative. And if a life insurance company is presenting something as everyone knows it, they're doing it because guess what? Everyone knows it. Now, Bill, the interesting thing, fascinating thing, that was in 1915. By 1950 or 1960, that had been forgotten. Cancer research had gone off in totally other directions. We're not going to focus on diet and nutrition. We're going to look at germs and disease theories. We're going to try to figure out a vaccine or some kind of pill that will prevent or cure cancer. And no one was looking at the diet. When 50 years earlier, people were saying, yes, it's diet. You've got to focus on the diet. So what I've done is, you know, I've tried to go back and look at, you know, many, many years, hundreds of years of people looking at these things, and a lot of fascinating work that's been done that basically has been forgotten. And I've tried to pull that together and in light of modern things that we're finding, try to, you know, pull it together and see, you know, try to present what the best of the past tied together with the best of the present. So there's been a lot of research, and it's just absolutely fascinating.
I think it's very funny that there's the big turnaround. Eggs were bad. Now eggs are good. Red meat was bad. Now red meat is good. Butter was bad. Margarine and all the butter substitutes were strongly recommended. And now it's, no, if you're going to use that, use butter. Somebody, I don't recall where I read it, made a real interesting point. He said, read the package, read the label on a butter substitute. Can you pronounce all those words? How many ingredients are there? Now look at the package of butter and tell me how many ingredients there are. And can you pronounce those words? I'm not encouraging everyone to go out and eat a stick of butter and use lots of butter. I'm just saying we've gone from the new and improved, what was supposed to be better and healthier, to back what, how long's butter been around? Hundreds of years? Thousands of years?
Well, it's been very fascinating. And there was a recent magazine article, I think it was either Time or Newsweek, that came out with a story, you know, basically saying the good news, it's okay to eat butter. And in the article, they said, gee, how did we get it wrong? Well, one of the ways you got it wrong was because Time and Newsweek and the New York Times and the entire modern media machine was pushing the fat is bad for you theory. And they were running magazine covers. You know, there was a famous one. You had a fried egg and some pieces of bacon on a plate, making a frowny face because I guess it was two fried eggs for the eyes and a piece of bacon for the frowny face. The bad news, you can't eat bacon and eggs anymore. You know, so when the media asks, how did we get it so wrong? Part of the answer is, you got it wrong because you thought it made a good story 20 or 30 years ago to say fat's bad for you, don't eat fat. And, of course, that tied into the Jetsons. Remember the Jetsons cartoon show?
Absolutely.
You know, we're all going to live in this magic world where we, you know, the cars are these little mini rocket ships, and we're all like, you know, living like astronauts in this techno-fantasy, disno-fantasy wonder world. And everything's going to be electronic and automated and wonderful. And there, you know, you won't have to lift a finger to do anything. There will be no more need for any kind of physical effort. How's that sound?
Well, and isn't that when the robots take over eventually?
Yeah, that's the Terminator theory. But the Jetsons gives you this mind view of technology will solve everything. And so the idea of replacing butter, which is old-fashioned, with this new, wonderful margarine product with all these chemicals and these unpronounceable names, and they make it in the laboratory, you know, men in white lab coats make this. Of course it's good for you. You know, how wrong we were. But that was the story. That was the narrative back then. And you know, it's a narrative that we're trying. You know, we're pushing back against it now. Thank gosh, we're trying to focus on the good from the past, as opposed to the worldview of anything from the past is no good.
Well, so that's
been interesting.
That's just a lot of people's mindset. If it's old, it can't be any good. There's got to be a new, better.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, part of the problem, and again, you know, I go back to so much of this has been forgotten.
Okay, I think we're headed into food allergies now.
Yeah, you know, because what people forget is that a lot of people are either allergic or intolerant to milk and dairy products. And particularly a lot of people over the age of 25 can no longer digest milk. I'm one of them. I haven't had milk since I was about 24, 25 years old.
It's also an ethnic issue, I believe.
There's an ethnic issue. A lot of African Americans find milk impossible to drink. And, you know, and yet we've got this worldview out there of milk is absolutely the most important thing in the world. And we never consider the issue of can you as an individual use a gallon of milk a day or is it going to cause problems? And taking the allergy issue a little bit further, most of the foods that we are taught in the bodybuilding magazines, the bodybuilding world teaches us to eat certain foods to gain muscle mass. Milk, eggs, soy powder. You know, soy is viewed as the healthiest food on the face of the planet by so many people. Something which, as you can probably tell from the tone of my voice, I disagree with. Wheat, peanuts, nuts, fish are all foods that we are told very good for you, very healthy. Eat them in large amounts. You know, the U.S. FDA tells us to, or the USDA tells us to eat 7 to 11 servings of wheat products every day. Grains and other wheat products, which basically in the modern world translate to
bread.
Bread, white bread, pasta, spaghetti, using white flour. 7 to 11 servings a day. Which is sort of the equivalent of that gallon of milk a day theory. And all the foods that I just mentioned, all the ones that when we were kids, we were told these are the best, the healthiest foods in the world for you. Those 8 foods are the 8 foods that are responsible for 90% of the food allergies in the world. And yet, without anyone ever considering the allergy issue, we are told consume enormous, massive amounts of those foods.
I want to interrupt you here because when people talk about food allergies, they don't recognize that they can be really subtle. I can tell if I eat peanuts, I just don't feel good. I'm not violently ill. I don't need to go to the emergency room. I'm not sick, but I just don't feel right. If I consume too much dairy, I just don't feel right. Food allergies can be very, very subtle things. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. You say, I'm allergic to, and they think, oh, you're going to die. You're going to end up in the emergency room. You're going to be violently ill. It's not always that extreme.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, what you have is something called a hidden food allergy, which is a food allergy that you don't even know about. You don't recognize. The crazy thing about a hidden food allergy is that in many cases, the food to which you are most allergic is the food that you most enjoy and probably eat every day, perhaps even several times a day. And you don't recognize the effect, that the bad effect that this food has on you. Simple story, food allergy story. A doctor, and as a matter of fact, he's an allergy doctor, has a hidden allergy to eggs. He doesn't know it. Loves eggs. Has 3, 4, 5, 6 eggs every morning. Sometimes has eggs for breakfast, eggs for lunch. Just loves them. Grew up on a farm in Iowa. Always had lots and lots of eggs to eat. As a young man in medical school, didn't have much money. Eggs are cheap. Ate lots and lots of eggs. Never knew he was allergic to them. Had horrible hay fever, sinus problems. And even though he's an allergy doctor, he doesn't think maybe there's a relationship here, cause and effect. So he tries an elimination diet as a test, doesn't eat any eggs for 3 days, feels terrible for a couple, you know, for the first 2 days, then starts to feel a little bit better. And he's thinking, gee, maybe there's something to this. That day, his wife bakes a cake for dinner using some eggs. He sits down. And by the way, he's a big man, played fullback on the football team when he was younger. Sits down, has a couple bites of cake, passes out. Ends up flat on his face on the floor because he has an allergic reaction to the eggs in the cake. Okay?
And where did you find this story?
Okay, I found that story in another book by Dr. McCarnes. That was published in the early 70s, so the information has been out there since the early 70s, and no one is piecing this together. And the allergy information, how to identify food allergies, how to test for them, how to use elimination diets, how to remove potentially allergenic foods from your diet one by one through an elimination diet to test and determine what you might be allergic to, how to develop diet plans that will help avoid food allergy issues. All of that information has been out there since the 1920s. And look where we are now, and people still are not getting it. And one aspect of the food allergy issue is, if you can, follow a varied diet and don't eat the same thing every day. Because if you do, you run the risk of developing a hidden or unknown, unsuspected allergy to a particular food item. You know, I feel like the kid is saying the emperor has no clothes, because I'm having to say that a lot of things that people, you know, people like me grew up reading and believing, if you examine them, they don't make much sense.
Supplement companies don't want you to read them, though.
Well, yeah, they don't want you to read them. And here's another thing that people don't want you to read and people don't want to talk about. Think of this. In the same book where they have the story about the physician that had the hidden egg allergy and discovered it in the way that I've just related, there is a story of a young woman who has horrible psychiatric issues. She's a cutter. She goes into a state of extreme anxiety, and the only thing that helps is to cut her wrist. So she ends up institutionalized. She manages to find something, breaks an ashtray, cuts her wrist, ends up hospitalized. They don't know what to do. They don't know whether, you know, electroshock or more psych drugs or what. Dr. McCarnes treats her with an allergy elimination diet that eliminates certain foods one by one to determine what foods trigger a reaction, and eventually finds out she does perfectly fine and her psychiatric issues go away if she is following a vegetarian diet.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, she is released from the hospital, goes home, strict orders, vegetarian only. Everything is going wonderfully. She's able to go back to school. She gets into a prestigious university. Things are wonderful. She tries some eggs. The eggs come from a farmer who raises organic eggs. She has no problem whatsoever. Huh, she thinks. That's interesting. I wonder what would happen if I had some of that farmer's chicken. So she has organic chicken. She's fine. She goes on to try other organic meats, including wild game. She's fine. She goes back to Dr. McCarnes. They compare notes, and they realize it wasn't the meat and the eggs and the dairy that were causing problems for her.
Pesticides and preservatives.
It was the chemicals. And she was eating organic vegetables that were chemical-free. Okay, so that's happening in England. At the same time that that's happening in England, the famous allergist in the United States called Dr. Ted Randolph, living in the Chicago area, is finding that he has patients with severe allergies that cannot eat certain vegetables. They can't eat broccoli. They can't eat carrots. They can't eat lettuce. They can't eat apples unless they eat organic fruits and vegetables. Because organic means no pesticides, no insecticides, no chemicals. Okay, so he finds that this is so important for his patients, he personally locates a farmer out somewhere west of Chicago who does all organic farming, and makes a deal with that farmer to bring fresh organic foods, meats, eggs, dairy, vegetables, to Chicago for his patients. Bill, this was back in the early 50s, the early 1950s. Okay, now, fast forward. September 2014, the world is in an uproar because an article is published about a young girl in Canada, 10-year-old girl in Canada, eats a piece of blueberry pie and has a severe life-threatening allergic reaction. Why? Is she allergic to blueberries? Nope. She's allergic to an antibiotic insecticide that was sprayed on the blueberries that were used in the blueberry pie. And this information has come out, and it's going around the internet. You can see it a lot of places now, but it originated in a journal, in a medical journal. And everyone is saying, oh my gosh, that's incredible. Well, you know what? Yes, it's incredible, but it's exactly the same information that's been around at least since the 1950s. But no one's paying any attention.
The problem is that's old information. We got to write new books. We got to come up with new and interesting things. That's not sexy. That's not exciting. How do we make money off it? There's the key. How do we make money off of that information from 60 years ago?
You're right. It's not sexy. It's old-fashioned. And we should just forget about it and go on to, you know, the latest scandal of, you know, nude celebrity photos on the internet or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever people want for distraction. But that's the kind of thing that, to me, is absolutely fascinating and critical. You know, it's critically important that information, that, you know, the information that an allergy doctor in Chicago in the 1950s discovered that his patients had to eat organic food, okay? To me, that is critical information because that tells us so much about the importance of organic food, chemical-free food. Doesn't that say maybe I really do want chemical-free food for my family? I'm not saying that if you eat conventional food, you're going to go into an allergic shock or an allergic reaction. What I'm saying is, if you have any degree of reaction to it at all, it, you know, gradually over time, it's going to wear you down. It's going to hurt you.
Now, I want to interrupt you because I want to bring a point. This is where people will start saying, but I can't afford. It's more expensive. I get a lot of the vegetables we use at a local farmer's market, and it really isn't. I get kale, I get spinach, I get onions, I get garlic, I get the best apples I've ever had. I get pineapple that's so sweet you can't even eat a piece of it. And it really doesn't cost that much more. Okay, when you get into like grass-fed beef, that's different. But your diet doesn't have to be perfect. But if you make some changes, add some organic things, get rid of some of the preservative-laden foods, it's got to improve.
Well, yeah, and you know, one thing that's very important is there are certain foods that it's very, very important to eat organic. For example, berries. And the reason is berries are sprayed with chemicals and you can't wash them off because you can't scrub them. Mm-hmm. If you scrub them, you know, you break the berry apart. Compare that to a pumpkin, which has a big hard shell, and you eat the inside. Okay, what is sprayed on the outer shell doesn't permeate into the, you know, the meat of the pumpkin on the inside as much as what is sprayed on a berry permeates into a berry because the berry is so small. So there are some things where it's much more critical to eat organic. Lettuce is another example because when lettuce is sprayed, the leaves of the lettuce absorb the chemicals and it's virtually impossible to get them off. But to the other point, I've actually got a section in the book where I say, okay, go to your fast food joint and buy dinner for a family of four. Your conventional quarter-pound hamburger, whatever it's called at any particular chain, fries, a shake, for a family of four, that meal is going to cost, if everyone has the sandwich, the shake, soft drink, or whatever, and the fries, that's going to cost $20 to $25.
Yep.
Okay. Take your $20 or $25, go to your local farmer's market. You can even buy a pound of grass-fed beef, and everybody gets a quarter pound of grass-fed, grass-finished, high-quality beef, fresh salad, fresh tomato, fresh vegetables, fresh fruit for dessert. If you want grains with your meal, buy whole grains, bulk grains, you know, cook up something like grits, very inexpensive on a per-serving basis. You can get organic cheese. You can get organic pickles, organic condiments. And the cost, when you add it up, is
negligible.
Less than the fast food meal, and less by a function of it's almost one half to two thirds. And if you do a little bit of gardening and you grow your own food, the cost can come down on a per person basis to this is what you pay for a sandwich or a burger from a fast food joint. You can have an entire organic meal, including grass fed beef or free pastured pork, for the same price. Lousy little sandwich from the fast food place. When people say organic's too expensive, what they're doing is they're saying, I can't afford to go to the great big store that brings in all this organic stuff from around the world and charges real expensive and sells it for expensive charges. I can't do that. Well, guess what? Neither can I, and I don't. I buy organic food from local farmers and growers. There's no middleman. You grow it, you bring it to the market, I show up, I give you cash, you give me fresh organic vegetables, perfect deal. It's a win-win.
See, that's the key. There are farmers markets everywhere. A lot of places, they just pop up on the weekend. But in my area, I'm here in South Florida, there's one that's on the beach every Sunday. There's one that's a few blocks away from me that's every Saturday and Sunday. And I know of at least three or four others in the general vicinity. And we have never come out of the one that we go to and gone, man, we spent a lot of money. Except when I go for my organic nuts and some of the other little goodies there. But the veggies are cheaper. They taste better. And here's something that I don't understand at all. I generally buy kale and spinach, and it will actually last longer than the stuff that I buy in the supermarket. Can you explain that one to me?
Sure. The produce that you buy in the supermarket is usually grown far away. 95% of the produce consumed by humans in the United States is grown in California. So it is harvested, it is refrigerated, it is shipped, the store gets it, the store puts it out, you come in a day or two later, you buy it. Okay, at that point in time, it's already 7 to 10 days old. That's why it doesn't last as long, because what you buy at the farmer's market has been harvested 24 to 48 hours before you buy it at the market. So there, you know, there's a 1 week difference on average between what you find in a conventional supermarket with conventional produce and what you find at a farmer's market. That's why the farmer's market produce will last longer, why it seems fresher, why it tastes better. But here's the other thing, Bill. The transportation, the time spent in transportation is time where every hour, every day, nutrients are being lost. They're being dissipated. And by the time that, for example, a head of broccoli grown in California, picked in California, shipped to Louisville, by the time that broccoli gets to Louisville, it may have only 20%, 30%, maybe only 10% of the vitamins and minerals that it had on the day that it was harvested. How about that?
That's a sad thing.
It's a sad thing, and it's a real problem, because if you're relying on that broccoli to supply your nutritional needs, you're not getting enough. And you can't make up for it by eating 10 heads of broccoli. That's not a good idea.
No. No, it's not. I just found it very interesting that my store-bought spinach starts getting slimy after 4 or 5 days, and my farmer's market spinach just starts to wilt, never gets slimy, and lasts a little longer.
It's a huge difference, and you know, I am passionate about the importance of organic food in the diet and local food and farmers markets. I am dead set against what I refer to as big agriculture, conventional agriculture. And I am dead set against big organic, you know, big corporations in the organic food business. You know, to me, that's a contradiction in terms. When I think of organic, I think of local farmers, local growers, growing for the local community and the people who live in the local community, selling that food to the local community. You know, that's how you buy, that's how you build a strong community. That's how you build food security. And that is how, I'm absolutely convinced, that's the way of the future going forward. We are not going to be living on food shipped halfway around the world. We are going to be relying on food grown very close to home. And in some cases, we'll probably be relying on food that we grow in our own backyards. And we will be better, stronger, and healthier the more we rely on and the more we use and the more we have access to local foods.
Lots of great nutrition information in that interview. If you'd like to listen to the interview in its entirety, or if you'd like to find out more about picking up a copy of Brooke's great nutrition book, Knife, Fork, and Muscle, go to my website, kosiabafitness.com, click on the interviews tab, and scroll down to September, I believe it is, of last year. That's when we recorded this interview initially. One of the very first ones I ever recorded. You'll find a few more interviews by Brooks posted there on the site. He's a busy guy, does a lot of writing, does a lot of research, and he's always got some good information, so I like to bring him back and talk to him to let you guys know what's going on in his part of the world. Now let's talk about next week's show. Well, you know, I think I'm going to just make you think about it and wonder and wait. I'll give you a clue. It's going to be one of the names I mentioned at the beginning of this show, but I'm not going to tell you who it is. If you want to know what we're going to talk about next week, just tune in and you'll see. You won't be disappointed. I appreciate all the comments, the suggestions for show topics, the information, the emails, all the stuff you guys have sent. Please continue to send all feedback in. It's all appreciated and it's all read. Send to resources@serotalk.com. you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app and submit an eye report. This has been the Real World Fitness Podcast. My name is Bill, and it's been a pleasure talking with you. I'll be back next week. Everybody have a fantastic week.